Good evening, everybody. It is 11 October 2017 at 9 p.m. Eastern, and this is the Courtroom Observer's Call. Tonight, I have something to read. It comes from a new website put up by one of our newest national coordinators. And it has a little bit of interest on it. It's really just getting started, but this concerns the courtroom observers, so I thought I would read it. I hate reading, but here we go. Court observers, the importance of observers. Our courts, at all levels, have seemed to move away from justice and discovering truth. Our own refusal to assert our rights has allowed the courts to chip away at these rights, replacing them with preference for corporate rules and statutory law. Judges have gathered the powers they have gained over time by following written laws and corporate statutes, and by ignoring due process. Fairness, true justice, and the truth itself most often fall victim. The people who are only looking for due process they deserve also fall victim. The purpose of a real justice system, that is, courts of record, is to find truth. A court presents an opportunity to allow the sides of a dispute to present their case to a jury. The jury decides both whether a law applies and the guilt or innocence of the offending party. Further, it is the jury that should decide reparations and sentencing. Instead, our justice system has been corrupted by those who wish to gain money and power from our disputes. The judges, the prosecutors, and even defense attorneys have usurped the power reserved only to the jury. Courts now have rules against video or audio recorders, and they physically limit sizes of galleries for spectators. They also want to limit the reporters to those corporate media so they can control what is promulgated to the general public. Court observers are important in offsetting these powers until the problems are corrected. The presence of court observers taking notes and keeping watchful eyes in a courtroom makes judges, prosecutors, and defense attorneys think twice about how they conduct our courts. Court observers accomplish their essential job by listening closely to what happens, taking accurate notes, and then filing affidavits describing what they saw happen in the courtroom. Once filed, these documents become part of the real records in the docket. Observers also instill courtrooms a spiritual feeling of doing the right thing and making decisions based on truthful facts, not lies and doctored evidence. A cure for chronic depression and feelings of helplessness is taking positive action and taking an active civic part in the judicial process. This is done with honor, justice, and mercy. Anyone, including you, can do this. documents. Observers should have a solid, basic understanding of the Constitution as it pertains to due process. Judges are also required by law to follow the American jurisprudence. The judge's demeanor should also be observed, and any extremities in bias, impatience towards defendants, or loss of composure. Detailed notes are transcribed during the trials of things that court clerks do not record. These documents are used later for helpful evidence that is missed or not allowed in the courtroom. Later, these documentaries or documents in the right hand, such as the National Liberty Alliance, can be used to present evidence into the records. And that ends what I wanted to read. I know we've gone over all this information in one way or another in the past, but now we have it on a website. And that website is patriotstand.us. And I think in the future there will be a lot more information that will be made available to all of us. And it's another website that we probably should keep an eye on. This website is by Ollie Smith. Any comments?
I thought it was nicely written. Short, sweet, coherent. Just what you want.
Well.
Is that Ollie?
Ollie is very... Go ahead.
Did you say Ollie or Ellie Smith?
Ollie.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry. I thought
Ollie was... Ollie is very upset about a lot of things that's happening out here, and that's his nature. Good man. He takes everything to heart, and he wants to see justice done, and we all do. So, Ollie is doing everything he can to help all of us, and that includes providing websites and information and knowledge, and he's doing the NLA news and posting things on YouTube for the National Liberty Alliance. There's a lot of information out there that a lot of us don't look at because we don't know where to find it. So I'm hoping that everyone will start looking at YouTube and see what Ollie is doing, because it affects all of us, and we should have the information that he's posting. Now, also, I talk about this because Ollie could use some help. He needs people to work with him on the news. And this is an opportunity for people in the various different committees to get a little more involved with all the different things that are happening that concern us. And Ollie is wanting to expand on the news that he's putting out. So it might be something fun for people to get involved in. So, I'm not sure where we go from here this evening. I was hoping somebody wanted to discuss what I read, but I guess everybody understood it and are up on it. I do hope that everyone is looking at the NLA website and paying attention to what's there. And I think everybody knows how I feel about the importance of courtroom observing. It's extremely important. One of the more important things that we do. The other thing is committees of safety. We need committees of safety right now, yesterday, in fact, in every county. And Ollie, there again, is recognizing that fact and is going to be doing things to direct attention to it. Well, Ollie does get into now this new website that he's put up. Besides what I wrote, he's also put on there the affidavit, the NLA affidavit. So you can go on there if you need and download it, print it, whatever. And, you know, it's available on that website. And he talks about the affidavit on the
Robert,
website.
Robert, this is Jim. Could you repeat the name of Ollie's new website?
It is Patriot, singular, PATRIOTSTAND.US.
With a .com after that?
No.
No.
Okay. Well, I tried to run it already and nothing came up, but...
Well, now in front of it is HTTP. Maybe you need to put that on there.
That's normally not required. No, I just tried it. It comes right up. PatriotStand.us pops right up there. Give it another try, Jim.
It's a beautiful website.
It is.
Nice backgrounds.
It just came up. It just took a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, it's got a nice cover
yeah.
page picture. There's
yes,
a,
it does.
Is that George Washington and Company, or who is that?
It does look like George.
You know, and I just texted you last night about Valley Forge and George Washington and how they fought barefooted in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
That was a comment after somebody said it's very hard to fight the government because I don't have enough money, and I thought of that. That's just it, you know. Just have to get out
George,
there.
George Washington's troops had rags wrapped around their feet and whatever else they could find. And, you know, there's nothing tougher than that, trying to fight a war in the snow with bare feet.
Right.
That's what it may take before this is all over.
And they won.
That's right, because just to say that, well, this is going to be hard to do, so I'm not going to do it. That's defeat right there.
Well, yeah, and there, it seems like most people are defeated before they ever start anymore.
It's much different just watching the TV at night.
Yes.
It's probably a good thing they didn't have TV back then. It would have been a distraction.
Well, they...
That's true.
Yeah, well, they didn't have much going on for entertainment, that's for sure. And I'm sure none of them wanted to be involved in a gunfight in a snowstorm. But they realized the importance, and they were patriots.
Well, I can add, if it's not off subject, the man that's leading the charge within power, I was able to look at his videos, and actually his successes are all about he just keeps looking for answers and keeps digging and uncovers the truth. And according to what they're saying, the powers that be are running and hiding as fast as they confront them. And I think that's the way that it works. That's been my experience in life is you just go right in there and demand the truth. And it's amazing how wonderful it works.
Yes, and this is what we're trying to do with the courtroom observing is we're demanding the truth by writing the affidavits and forcing the truth out. You know, we gotta keep the pressure on.
Well, I'll mention a little bit of my traffic case. I was pretty much beating up the Santa Fe Magistrate Court, and suddenly the chief judge inserted in the record that I had threatened him with bodily harm, came out of nowhere 5 months after I'd last seen him. And what is a person to do? Well, you have to go right after that. You have to, you know, make a statement, you know, about it and demand to discuss it in the courtroom.
Yeah, you got to object immediately to something like that because silence is, would say that he was right. So you have to object and fight it.
Well, I've had experiences like that all my life with people. And you just keep pushing the truth, and whatever they're up to falls into splinters pretty quick.
Well, so long as you're in the right, doing the right thing, you will always eventually come out on top.
I believe the word is integrity.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, one thing that we mentioned, but it's probably 3 months ago, and I think it bears mentioning again, and that is that we do continue to post things on the different pages and on the website for the different committees and stuff. And one thing we posted about 3 months ago was called Courtroom Observers Checklist, and you'll find it on the main page for the Courtroom Observers. And I think probably a lot of people are reluctant to go into the court even as a observer, or probably maybe some of them even thinking about going to the court, period, because they don't feel that they have the training or background or the knowledge to be able to tell whether the judge is in violation of anything or what should they look for or what constitutes a violation, that sort of thing. So I'd like to just run through that list quickly. The first violation on the list is called harassment and or seizure of A, pocket constitutions, or B, the jury nullification handbook. Now, that happened in the trial in Portland. If you had a pocket constitution, you had to turn it around backwards and so on, so no one would know that you had that feared document, the Constitution, with you. A second violation was failure to allow filing of defense papers. They kept just chopping the defense out there, say you can't submit this, you can't talk about that, and all this kind of nonsense. That's a direct violation. The third one was where the judge and or prosecutor and it failed to provide and include finding of fact with denial of defendant's papers. A biggie is the next one, and that's a failure to allow a jury trial. That pops up, as many people on this call already know, very frequently. They just get adjudicated by the judge himself. He does summary judgment on you, plain, fair, and simple. They've violated your right to a jury trial for anything over $20.
And that, once again, happened in Portland also.
Yeah, you better believe it. I think this list was made up by somebody who was monitoring Portland quite closely. The next violation is failure to recognize and follow the Constitution, or treason against the Constitution. That was almost a daily occurrence out there, if I recall right.
Yes.
And
well,
failure
just the,
to...
fact, just the fact that they refused to allow anyone to read from the Constitution or the Bible.
Right.
That was, you know, that was treason every day.
It's at least felony treason, if not worse.
Right.
The next one is failure to produce verified complaint of damaged party. And also, going along with that, the failure to produce that damaged party. Who was damaged? Who was injured? Supposedly they kept the BLM workers from attending their work, but the BLM leader had shipped them off somewhere else to do their work, which was minimal that time of year anyway. The next violation is failure to allow cross-examination of the damaged party. And there was, well, I guess the defense just rested prematurely as a protest at the end of the last trial in Portland, period.
Now, that was in Nevada there.
That's right. You're right. That was Nevada. Next violation is failure to meet the elements of the complaint. Then we have failure to prove jurisdiction and operate an unknown jurisdiction. So that's John's favorite. They have us out here in Neverland, and they're operating in unknown jurisdictions. We have no clue what they're trying to do to us. We know what they're trying to do to us, but what legality do they have to adjudicate us? The next violation is failure to show the natural and cause, or the nature, excuse me. That's misspelled. I'll have to change that. Nature and cause of charges. Then we have failure to address proper party on court documents per Stiles manual, all caps, people, not persons. Then we have police cannot be a witness and complainant at the same time. There must be verified complaint of the damaged party. And the state cannot be the damaged party, right?
Now then, it's for sure that the victim has to have blood, bones, skin, eyes, whatever. Can't not be inanimate.
Exactly. The next one, traffic tickets are not jailable offenses, only violations, unless damage to persons or property. And again, if you run somebody down, you have a problem. If there's no personal injury, property injury, no crime. And the last one is, again, a catch-all. They do it all the time. They perform summary judgment, period. Over $20, you're guaranteed a trial by jury. So I think those give you a pretty good background on all of the things. And if you want to see how they're handled in court and how often they appeared, go listen to some of the comments on the trials in either Nevada or in Portland. They're prime examples of probably every one of those, many of them given daily, time after time. And that's all I have to offer tonight.
Well, that's good. Thank you, Jim. And it's very true that Well, we thought Portland was so horrible, but it turns out that the judge in Portland was a saint compared to the one in Nevada.
And that's terrible.
Yes, it is. Well, I will say that we have a lot of truth about to come out in Nevada concerning the shootings. Some first-hand information is being received from people that were shot, were running for their lives, and I am getting word that shots were not just coming from the hotel. They were coming from various different directions, from street level. So there's a lot we are going to be finding out shortly that hasn't come out yet. But the people there have taken a lot of video and are putting it out because they know that the narrative being put out by the FBI is wrong.
How do they justify taking 72 minutes after the shooting started to get up to the guy's hotel room and finally break his door down?
It's pretty hard to justify that.
Did they go for lunch?
Well, they probably took dinner break first.
Yeah, first things first.
Yeah. And, of course, that had to start with drinks and then...
Of course. When you need help in seconds, they're only an hour and 12 minutes away, right?
Yeah. And I'm also getting word that the sheriff was hushed up, not allowed to tell the truth.
Yeah, I've seen a lot about.
We might think that the sheriff has the power and nobody can shut him up. He is the top law enforcement in his area. However, the states have taken control of the sheriffs and there's many things that they don't allow to happen, to be said or done. And I'm kind of thinking that the sheriff, if they want to tell the truth about everything and be constitutional, they need protection. And that would be by the people in their county or militia.
I know in the state of Pennsylvania about 20 years ago, they demoted the sheriffs. They took away their ability to write tickets by passing a statute. And the sheriffs have gone along with it. So
I think it's Delaware. They've relegated the sheriff to just operating the jail and has no arrest power.
Mm-hmm. And then Connecticut did away with them all together and replaced
right.
them by marshals that are appointed.
Yep. So, let's see, we got a man that was part of the P3s, the Patriots that were arrested going through this thing with the Bundys. He lives in Las Vegas. And his family is there. And so word is coming from him about what's happening. His son was one of those shot and his daughter-in-law was shot in the face and killed.
You mean at the concert?
Yes.
Right.
Well, that is definitely hurtful and hard to hear.
Yes. So there's a lot of things being covered up from what, based on the information that's coming out of there that I'm getting, a lot of cover up. And you know, ISIS is claiming, you know, responsibility for that. And word is coming out about how many guns were involved, and some of those in the know right now are thinking that there was a, that rather than a shooting being planned, that it was actually a gun sale that was supposed to happen, and that the guns in the room were lined up as you know, to be viewed by, well, we kind of think ISIS representative, and we know that the guy that supposedly was the shooter shipped off, well, they first said $100,000, but I'm hearing now it was actually $300,000 shipped it off to his wife in the Philippines just before all this happened. So it sounds to me like there might have been a little transaction happening. And the thought is that they killed him in his room. They took the guns and spread out down on street level and began shooting people. I think there's a lot of validity in that because of the reports that are coming out.
I've also read that it was a FBI sting, and he was working for the FBI. That's why they had cameras in the hall and cameras in the room and all that sort of thing, and they were going to take down this U.S. ISIS group. But somehow ISIS found out about it, went there and gathered up all the goodies and did him in and started shooting people and then walked away. And so
yep.
What are you going to do if you're the FBI? You know, you got to cover your tracks somehow. Typical FBI operation, you know?
Right. I think there's a lot of truth to that. But I think it's going to be a long time that we're going to be getting information out of there. I think that things are going to, you know, the people are fed up with the government and what they're doing. And they're refusing to shut up. They're submitting their videos and they're telling their stories, and this is what we need: people fed up and refusing to shut up. They need to get their stories out. They need to get the videos out, and it's gonna help us all the way around.
The problem is, who do you send this evidence to? You send it to the FBI and they'll bury it.
Yep, you're right. What they need to do is get it out somehow to, I don't know, you need to be able to find a news agency that's willing to print it.
Well, that's a problem too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Or to the alternative news.
Right.
And alternative news is getting the word about their existence. It is getting out, so people do know about them. Even mainstream media is talking about alternative news, telling how bad they are, but at the same time, they're putting the word out that they exist.
Right.
And so that's putting pressure on the government. We are putting pressure on the government. Courtroom observers are putting pressure on the government as well, through the judges, through the courtrooms, through the prosecutors. And that pressure needs to be kept going. We need to keep pressure in all of them.
How you doing, Jeremiah here? David Scheid, he was courtroom observing, apparently, and was arrested. The judge ordered him to be arrested by the sheriff. And I guess they followed through with it and all that. And then David Scheid followed up with his own little complaint, criminal complaint. And so I was wondering, why would a judge try and make an arrest for contempt based on someone's presence in the courtroom?
Well, I know that happened, and I know David Scheib, and I think that there's a little more than to the story than what has been let out. But David Scheib is a big thorn in the hearts of the judges. He's all across the United States documenting the court cases, the crooked ones. He's documenting them on film.
That's excellent. He can also do it in writing. I did my own documentation once, where I witnessed a judge. I witnessed a judge tell the defendant three separate times that they were willingly waiving their constitutional rights, and each time the defendant willingly said, "I agree, I agree, I agree." You know, so stuff like that does need to be documented when judges do stuff like that.
Well, David Scheib interviews the defendants and puts them on film, and he makes a documentary of every one of those cases. And so he's a thorn in their side, and yes, they wanted to shut him up. They failed because they didn't shut him up, and he's still at it. He's still going.
Well, what is it about these judges? I mean, being in the courtroom basically allows the judge to be on his P's and Q's, to where he knows, he or she knows, they can't just sit here and ask a defendant if they want to waive constitutional liberty, right? I mean, if they do, they can't get away with that only for so long, right?
Well, with it being documented the way it's being documented, yeah, they can't get away with it much longer. It's being put out there to everyone.
You know, going
exactly,
back
and I think, yeah,
to the Las Vegas shootings. You know, these witnesses could be the ultimate courtroom observers if we could just find them and get them to file affidavits. And get the affidavits and everything all logged in, notarized into the court system, might give them a little bit of protection.
Right. Well, we've got, Ollie is making an attempt to and doing it his way to get affidavits from the P3 that lives there, because he's not in jail anymore. He's out. He's free. And so, and he has access to all the people that have firsthand information. And so he and Ollie are talking, and Ollie has great hopes of obtaining a bunch of affidavits on everything happening down there, and including the shooting.
That would be a real plus.
Yes.
That's interesting, so because, I think if you do third-party receipt of affidavits, that's actually acting as a court observer, maybe not a courtroom observer, but you still saw the document. You still witnessed the autographs, and in some ways you are a court observer, even by witnessing the document. That's what you just said, right, Guy?
That's legal. And, he's going to the people that have that firsthand information and getting them to write the documents and have them notarized. And that stands up in court.
Hey, Robert, this is Val.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, Val, how you doing?
Hey, Jeremiah. Give me I'm going to put some 5 cents into the discussion. First of all, I mean, we never discuss when judge abused his discretion writing the affidavit on him. I never heard anybody propose that. Without any answer from you, let me continue. I have in front of me Florida Constitution, and there is an Article 5 speaking about the judiciary, and Section 3 speak about Supreme Court. And listen, Jeremiah, because I think you like to read, right? Listen, Supreme Court may issue writs of prohibition to courts in all writs necessary to complete exercise of its jurisdiction. But the point I try to make, that there is at least 10 points when the Supreme Court may intervene when the issue is of public importance. For example, there was a nice one, and I kind of escaped me. Where is it? Okay. May review a question of law certified by Supreme Court of the United States or United States Court Appeals, which is determinative of the cause of which there is no controlling precedent of the Supreme Court. Without going into that detail, what I'm getting to it is, if there is a great public importance, that that's the quote, we may go to the Supreme Court and ask for the clarification.
That's yes, what, yes. And, Val, the reason why is because they will help to determine whether the policy implemented by the agency, right, is constitutional or not. And that's the ultimate arbiter of judicial review is the Supreme Court. I yield. Go ahead, sir.
But the point I try to make, this is the great public importance. Great public importance again. Great public importance again. That doesn't mean exactly what you, I know what you're saying, Jeremiah. There is not like due process. This thing could be go from the, let's say from you, be in the county court. You can go all the way bypassing the appellates, go already to the Supreme Court. Somebody suggested go to the Attorney General, and then and ask the Attorney General come to your trial and answer this question. The question is, the judges runs amok. The judges, asking you to don't take the constitution as a defense. But here, you know, we have remedy, and I never heard anybody raise the question. Once I tried to raise this question to John, but John kind of like always, he just said he don't know nothing about it, and that's it. That's I yield now.
Well, Val, what was your question though? I didn't quite understand your question.
This is no question. That was kind of comment. First, my comment was, did ever somebody wrote a affidavit on judge? And second, I quote you from the Florida Constitution. There is, in the case of great public importance, way to ask Supreme Court if the, let's say, judge acting within the limits of his authority. That's my comment.
I think I know what he's saying, you guys. Has anyone ever written a memorandum on the power of the judge, and has anyone ever written an affidavit or, you know, a letter to a judge, you know, claiming his unlawfulness? I mean, is that pretty clear, Val?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but you're really, this is Jim in Mexico, I believe it's Val in Florida. He's wanting to go to the Supreme Court and ask them to clarify, does the judge have the right to do that?
Yes, something like that.
Like the Nevada judge getting away with what he's getting away with, or the one who arrested the sheriff.
Yeah, that's pretty much, you know, what I'm getting to.
Or in my little case, the magistrate judge throws in a lie that I threatened him with bodily harm 5 months after the last time I saw him, so. You know, all the courts are corrupt. They're all, you know, the proceeding in fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at this photograph of George Washington and the troops, and I'm thinking back to that time. That's what it was the British had gotten so out of control, they were just ignoring all the colonies' complaints, and fireworks began.
Well, whenever you look at what happened back 240 years ago, or whatever it was.
A great point, by the way.
We have the same thing happening right here now.
That's
again.
Right. That's right.
So
it's exactly what's happening.
And that, to me, then says that the Constitution is as relevant now as it was then. And, you know, they called the Patriots then outlaws or rebels or whatever, and they're doing the same thing to us now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what that means to me is we need to push forward. I am actually being schooled by all of the greats, people on this call, as well as many other calls, and also they've made a lot of videos. But the underlying agenda seems to be to push forward with an American style of common law, which is based on the English common law, but has still its own individual characteristics. And
well,
the primary characteristic is the fundamental basis of contract law, like, you know, basically contract. Even on the level of government, whereby we consent to be governed, and therefore there's a compact, you know, and what we're doing now on these calls is altering the form of government, or at least attempting to, I think, alter the form of government, because there's issues that are not being dealt with, and everyone will probably agree that even some pivotal issues of major concern, national as well as statewide concern, have just not been dealt with by the Supreme Court of the nation, you know? So
well, the only thing that anybody's trying to do is to return our government to what it was in the beginning, constitutional republic. It's not that they're trying to alter our government, they're just trying to return it to what it's supposed to be.
redress
the
grievances.
I think that's it, Robert. That's exactly what we're doing.
Well, not that anything is wrong with altering the form of government, right, Robert?
Well, I see the, you know, when you say altering government, then it looks like we're trying to change the Constitution, or we're not. They've altered by what they've done, bringing in statutes. They've altered the government already, and so what we're doing is trying to return to what it's supposed to be and do away with what was altered.
Exactly. Okay. I totally agree. And for the purpose of the courtroom reserve calls, I mean, we're not here to alter it, but we were kind of getting a little bit off track. But I think, when we're going about the general process of courtroom observing, it's really about sustaining, right, the consensus of the community.
Right. The people have the power, and so, you know, elected officials are supposed to be doing the will of the people, and they're not. And so we need to get them back to that.
Well,
you know,
what has already happened?
They are our servants. And we allow them to get away with usurping those powers. And if people would just get back to the Constitution and realize that the Constitution was written not for we the people, but we the people wrote the Constitution to put limits on the authority of elected officials. And so if, you know, the powers that the government has are enumerated, and if they are not on the list in the Constitution, then they do not have that power. And we need to people need to know the Constitution and stand up and say, no, mm-hmm. you can't do that. That's not listed on the Constitution, so back off.
Absolutely. And prohibition of prohibiting people to come in and courtroom observe by threat of force is a violation of not just nature's laws, right, necessarily, but the First Amendment, which is freedom of speech, because when you really think about it, we have the ability to interpret what's being said in there, just like the courtroom, who's the one that types out all the stuff, everything, the person that, the
court, the,
who does all the type?
The shorthand lady.
Shorthand, yeah.
Court reporter.
There you go, court reporter.
Yeah.
Thank you. But it's like being in there as a courtroom observer is on the same level as being a court reporter in some ways, because you're interpreting what's being said. I yield.
Well, the court reporter is simply just recording everything that is said, whereas the courtroom observers are recording the things that are in error, that are wrong, you know, so that they can make an affidavit and help the defendant to fight their case.
Exactly.
One more thing. I was once in the court, and the opposing attorney brought up another attorney to testify on his behalf. So I am thinking right now, maybe we should, like I said earlier, call the assistant of general attorney, come to the court and be our witness. Ask them what the really law is. That would be great, I guess.
Well, Val, that's a good point, but I think it's a bit off track, because we're dealing with people getting kicked out of the courtrooms for just being there observing. And I think it's probably a good question to ask, right, to Robert or Val or anyone that can answer it. You know, how do we find ourselves in the position where we're getting kicked out of the courtroom you know, just for observing, is it a standing thing? Is it because we're not a resident issue? Are they checking IDs and things like that? Have you guys noticed any of that stuff going on in the courtroom?
I believe that when somebody gets kicked out or arrested while observing, it's because they were vocal and disruptive. However,
okay.
We have the right, you know, those are public buildings, and we the people have the right to record everything that happens in a public building that is of interest to the people. And so what they're doing by not allowing us to record is they are breaking the rules, and in my eyes, that could be considered treason by what they're doing there. And the Ninth Circuit Court has, along with other courts, made the rulings that we the people do, in fact, have the right to record everything in the public building. And that's a matter of record. Now, I don't have it. I've misplaced it someplace, but I got to get it back. But I have.
Well, the reason.
I have two or three.
That's rooms. Interesting. Yeah.
I have the rules.
That's cool.
Somewhere.
Yeah. I like that because, you know, what's interesting about that is it flies in the face of rules that state that courts are not somehow administrative agencies bound by law, because in some way, when you look at it, if we the people come in and say, no, we're not, you know, we're standing underneath 11120 of the government code of California that says the people do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them, and we want to film in the courtroom, and you're an agency, so therefore we have to film. And I'm telling you now, this is where they're getting away from it. They're saying because they are not an administrative agency that they have a right to refuse to be videoed and to have all of their, containment, everything that's going on in there, all their continents or whatever, videotaped. If they don't want that, they don't have to allow it because they are not an administrative agency under the Title V. Or even under the Sunshine Act in California, from my understanding. And so that's kind of a loophole for the court to say no thank you to the videoing. Go ahead.
They can't do that, but the thing is they are not operating under the Constitution. They're operating under statutes, and so they make their own rules. Now, I have gone as a courtroom observer and taken those Ninth Circuit Court rulings with me and showed the court clerk that they are breaking the law, and the court clerk then said, oh no, it's okay if you record, you just have to get permission from the judge. I said, I don't have to get permission from anybody, I have the right. And they were a little bit scared there in a couple of the courts that I was in, because they knew I was right. And
right, but see, imagine this. Imagine how big the manipulation is, you guys. So big, right, that they literally pretend to be an administrative agency just so you guys will think that they have to follow that type of transparency rule, when in fact, by law, they don't have to do it. This is where all the confusion is coming from.
Well, you also got to know that a judge doesn't have the power to do what he's doing. He's just an administrator. I don't care what court he's in. He's nothing more than an administrator. And it's the jury that is the power.
Have you heard of, everybody I think was well versed on the jury being the power. But of course, there's some normative issues. But the issue here's a question. Have you heard of this Grindel 61 guy? His name is Grindel. Grindall 61 or whatever I think his name is. He has a group of people that go out into like Orange County area, and what they what he does is basically confront city council and sit there in their council meetings and observe. And they have other people that go in there. Of course, they are under the banner of Donald Trump and Make America Great Again. So, but they do observe, and but I think that this courtroom observing thing is something that our that any adversary to true lawful Republican government here in America is probably well aware of, and is probably already working to, you know, promote situations where fake people are actually out there working, you know, as courtroom observers and putting out propaganda, you know. So this is why it's important for everybody that has a genuine heart in this to get out there and do genuine courtroom observing and really keep at it, because we don't want to let the propagandists get the best of us. When they get out there and try to act like they're doing genuine reporting, when it's really you that's in there doing the hard work, that's wrong.
Well, the next step for courtroom observers is to be committee of safety. And the committee of safety is where you get all the people in every county involved. And you go to not just the court hearings, but you go to county commissioner meetings, city council meetings, town hall meetings, and you say, look, what you're doing is right or it's wrong, and this is why it's wrong, and this is what the will of the people want in this area, and this is what you need to be doing. And then you start taking control. And once you take control in individual counties, then you take control of the state. And once you take control of the states, then you take control of the federal government. It all begins in the local areas. And courtroom observing is sort of a stopgap measure until the committees of safety get formed and begin doing what their duties are. In which case, then they will sit in every courtroom, they will sit in every council meeting and commissioner meeting, and they will start holding their feet to the fire. And because they have, if they've done their job properly, they have brought the people of the county together to talk with each other and find out what the people themselves want. And then they're going to the elected officials and saying, you're going to do this. And if they don't, then used to be back in the 1600s, 1700s, then they would break out the pitchforks and whatnot, and they'd go physically take the elected officials out. Nowadays, we have a little more humane way of doing it, and that's you file a petition or recall against an elected official that doesn't want to do the job by the Constitution. And if you've got the people in the county backing you, you're going to win that recall petition, and you're going to replace them with somebody that is constitutional. And once you've done that, then you have taken control of the county. The people have taken control of the county. And once you have taken control of the county, you've gotten rid of all the corruption. And so,
well, here's the other thing.
You take the corruption from the state.
Okay. Well, yeah, because, well, here's the other thing that you're failing to mention real quick. Not that you're not saying a lot of good points, because this is kind of a segue into something different, but it's all along the same lines, is that the county, right, just because it's verified, authenticated, or certified by legislature, right? It's created, it's a creature of the state, normally, right? What we have to remember is that the county's been around a lot longer than statism, basically. County-style government is the idea is there's no rules that can sit here and say that the state legislatures get to determine where the county lines are located. So this is why it's important to remember the precinct level of the county and also the district level of each county. When you start to organize enough people in your districts, you should be able to create a new county under charter. And despite any other municipal charter organization that's already out there doing some sort of general provisional government. You know what I'm saying, guys?
There is a procedure.
Yeah.
To where you can go and file a FOIA request, and you may find that your county is not even an actual county, in which case then you can throw them out and form a new one.
Right. Let me ask you this then.
You got to know what to ask for.
Here's my question. Let's say the city and county of San Francisco, which is a consolidated city and county, since they basically, through their charter, totally got rid of the county, all they have now is a municipal corporation and city, right? Is that reason to actually to give all the people the authority to start to create their own little county governments within that the structure?
I don't think so. I think you have to file the FOIA reports and find out what all their documents are, what they have, and how they've done it. They may have it to where it's legal, mm-hmm. and they may not. If they don't have the proper forms, then you can disband that county.
Okay, let me dispel some myth real quick. FOIA is merely for federal agencies. FOIA does not apply to state agencies.
Yes, it does.
What we need to remember,
it applies to the state, and it applies to the county. It applies to everyone.
Well, they have, what it is really, if you really think about it, it's a standardization thing, where the federal government issues a standard, and then all the states are supposed to fall underneath the same standard, and therefore they end up creating like the Sunshine Act or whatever preceding act, you get what I'm saying, that they're going to create an act based on that.
The federal standard. Government is not the power. They don't have power over the state. The state
no,
has
that's
power
right.
over the federal government.
That's why so it's a standard, not a rule. That's right.
And
you're right.
So the state, so long as they are within the federal constitution, then they govern themselves.
The problem that I have with that is that there's no room for expanding into freedom, areas of freedom that exist that we have not explored yet as people. So if we're constantly limited by federal regulation, we as states, organized body politics, we wouldn't be able to actually express our true freedom and character. You know, I mean, obviously there are some liberties that we should give up, you know, so that we can remain a union, I suppose, you know what I mean, for purposes of national protection as well as, I guess, the local insurrection and rebellion.
Much of everything is regulated by a vote of the people.
Jeremiah, let me put 5 cents in it. Municipal corporation can be established and can be abolished by the people. Municipal corporation comprise three parts. corporate, governmental, and proprietorial. Definition of proprietorial is not in the favor of the people. So this thing alone, it's against us. And in Florida, municipal corporations actually are created under the home rule. In other words, it's the quasi-institution because they abuse your rights, but they can be abolished and they can be established. That's why they are not really, really, if you know where they're standing, or you can beat them all the time. Because they don't have much power.
Well, let me correct you real quick, because what you said was when they organize, they're actually the municipal. When we organize our townships under the people power, that's quasi-municipal because it's not really under the state's police power. It's under the de jure body politic power of the state.
Their home rule,
which is something,
in Florida,
yeah.
I don't know what is definition home rule, but you can establish and abolish. If you don't like it, the only thing with the Constitution care, you have to pay the debts, nothing else. You can abolish them tomorrow.
Let me ask you this, Val, because this is kind of a good conversation. Have you ever looked into the Constitution to find the words home rule? I have, and I can't find them anywhere in there. They don't exist. The word home rule does not exist in the United States Constitution.
That's what I said. Municipal corporation is... If you look in their language, always you find something, you never find the word like must, always with like proposition, it shall, something like that, because they are exactly what we are saying, they're against, that not in our benefit. Stupid people, they established them because they thought that the municipal corporation is going to be for their advantage. But go to Blacklaw Dictionary and find the definition of the proprietorial power, proprietary. It says not necessary benefit the people.
Right, now I get that. And that's what home rule. Well, that's because home rule is merely a provisional governmental means to an end. And realistically, home rule is nothing more than a bastard child of common law jural societies. That's all it is. We got the local community that is supposed to take responsibility for their actions, right, Val?
Well, what I said, you know, you can establish them and you can abolish. So everything is in your hand. So you said don't complain when you establish them. The best way to stop complaining, abolish them. That's how the court's
well,
looking at it.
Abolish them is an ambiguous pronoun. But I'll just say this. We need to keep in mind that we're not here to abolish the form of government necessarily, right, that we have, because I think we have consensus.
I'm speaking about only municipal corporations. And this is the words from the Constitution of Florida.
Well, sometimes, okay, here's where I think we need municipal corporations since we're on the subject matter. We only need it in the case of domestic insurrection and rebellion and also foreign invasion. But when it comes to issues of statewide concern by people of the state, there's no municipal authority necessary. We can totally rely on the common law jural societies to solve the problems. But, yeah, did that answer
just
everything?
Claim your rights, just claim your rights, and that's it. Don't wait till judged. Put his right on you.
Okay, but have you been to the courtroom recently? I have not been there actually in a while. But when was the last time you did some observing? Because I haven't. I'm just curious here.
No. Look, observing is one thing, but I've been as the defender, and I was the plaintiff, so I had a little experience. But this is personal. I'm not gonna dwell on it.
But if you ever go into the court just because you want to sit in there and watch how the judge acts, I mean, that's another experience altogether because you don't have the pressure of being under the gun. And so I highly recommend that you try to find a courtroom that you can go in and just sit and listen and watch the judge and listen to the sheriff, listen to the prosecutor, listen to to everybody in there. See what they're doing, Val. Listen to them. Have you done that?
Look, one thing. This is personal. I went to the federal court, which is the district court. I came, and I my case was about due process. I went there. There's the gentleman, young gentleman, is sitting outside the courtroom. I was dressed up, so is he. So I introduced myself. He said that he is the prosecutor, actually attorney for the federal government. We start talking about the sports. We went in. The judge says he's not the judge, he's the magistrate. I didn't know what it was because it was some time ago. So I said to the judge, you know, and she said first, there was magistrate, that the district court is very, very limited jurisdiction court. I said, fine. So I say my thing. I said, Your Honor, the federal government was late on the response to my motion. She said, yeah, I know, but I will accept it. So I said, fine. And we talk, and judge rule with me. I won the case. And there was not in the common law, and it was the statutory court. And, you know, I just look what is in it and act upon, try to find a way to win it. And, you know, I'm speaking from the experience. And we went outside. I talked to the attorney. We talked about sports. We were like, you know, like he did his job, I did my job. Nobody was mad. I yield.
All right. Well, we've run over time. We need to think about getting off of here. Other things going on.
Robert.
Yes.
Yes, last Thursday night call, In Power Movement.
Yes.
Okay. Is there any copies of that? I went to the NLA site and I couldn't find any Thursday for downloads.
Just go to their website, In Power Movement.
No, but that was an NLA call Thursday night. Correct?
Well,
they have it on their website.
That call was, I think you're talking about, is the Committee of Safety. And, yes, that is on the Committee of Safety page.
Because I went to that Committee of Safety, and I didn't see any place to download it.
It's at the bottom of the page on the NLA site.
Okay, well, I'll try it again. I don't know. It didn't show up at first. So
the call is there, but if you're looking for the information on Empower, you'll have to go to their website and watch their DVD if that's what you're after.
No, I wanna record the download.
Sorry.
The actual phone call that they had last Thursday night. I listened to it, and he talked so fast and everything, I'd like to download it so that I could take it apart.
In fact, the last two Thursday nights, In Power was talked about.
Right, but the In Power website didn't have it on there. They've got videos and stuff of their actual stuff
see,
that they talk about.
On Thursday night, that was Captain John that spoke about it.
Right. So his Captain John's recording, I'm trying to find.
Yeah, well, that's on the COS site, on the MLA site.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on the page. I'm looking at it right now. It's for October 5th.
Okay, that's a download, then I can download it?
Yeah, you just click it. I don't know if you can download it. You can listen to it.
Right. Well, if I can listen to it, I can download it. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's there.
Thank you, man.
Hey, what's up? I got cut off earlier. My call got cut off. I think I actually hung up the call for a second.
Well, I need
sorry
to,
about that.
We need to close this call off. We've run way over time.
Can I finish my thought real quick, and then is that okay?
Well, so long as it's quick.
I'll try. And this is just in closing for the courtroom observing purposes. The bottom line is, if we don't have courtroom observers, we're not going to be able to be in there as witnesses documenting when the judge or anyone in there actually is not paying attention to the law of the case or is ignoring the law of the case. And that is super crucial. That's why it's important for everybody to actually be in there. Even if you just want to be in there for the present sake, just being there is enough to scare the judge a little bit to be on his P's and Q's, you know. So I honor you, Carl. I honor everybody on the call. Jeremiah here in Northern California signing off. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, folks, been a pleasure, as always, and turned into quite a conversation, which is good always. We accomplish things when we talk. So look forward to seeing you all next week. Visit us on the COS call tomorrow night.